Welcome to Today on Broadway for Wednesday, August 17, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Star's James Marino.
James, first, a longtime listener of ours, someone who writes in daily and tells us how much she loves us, is going to be honored by the American Theater Wing later this fall. And that is, of course, Tony Award-winning actress Cicely Tyson. You should see the tweets she sends us. She's a big fan. But in all seriousness, the American Theater Wing announced that at its annual gala, they were going to recognize the incredibly talented actress in her long career at their annual gala on September 26, 2016. She's just remarkable, whether it's on stage. She's just on stage in the Gin Game, and then you see her on TV shows like How to Get Away with Murder. She is awesome, and congratulations to her. It is an honor that is very, very richly deserved.
Absolutely. Oh, she just sent me a Snapchat.
Dude, I don't even know what Snapchat is. If it's Cicely Tyson is mastering Snapchat, I'm going to be angry.
All right. Okay, we better get on to the news. Big names head to the Fun Home Tour.
Yeah, yesterday at the stroke of midnight, the producers of the Tony-winning musical Fun Home announced the cast of the show's first national tour. Robert Petcoff, who played the role of Tatya in both the Broadway revival and the Ellis Island concert of Ragtime, will play Bruce. He also was in All the Way on Broadway, as well as other things. Susan Monitz will play Helen, and Equity's president, Kate Schindel, will play adult Allison. She's a little taller than Beth Malone, but otherwise that is awesome casting. I love Kate Schindel. In addition to her unpaid position as the AEA president, Schindel, who was also 1998's Miss America, replaced in the original Jekyll and Hyde production and in the 98 revival of Cabaret, as well as creating the roles of Vivian and the Mad Hatter and the original Broadway casts of Legally Blonde the musical and Wonderland respectively. Joining them on tour will be Abby Corrigan as Medium Allison, Alessandra Baldacchino as Small Allison, a role which she understudies on Broadway, Karen Eilbach as Joan, and Robert Hager as Roy. There are still some other casting announcements to be made, and some that I didn't get to, and some smaller smaller roles and understudies, but we will have all of that in the notes at broadwayradio.com, so check that out. Fun Home is not coming anywhere near Florida right now, so I'm a little upset about that, so I've got to figure out a way to see it. But James, what really interests me about this is that off-Broadway, I believe, and correct me because I know you saw it, it was done in a normal proscenium stage. Then on Broadway, it went to Circle in the Square, where it was done in the round. Now I assume it's going to have to go back to playing these big roadhouses in a proscenium setting.
Well, here's my first thought on this, is that Fun Home, if we could do it site-specific in funeral homes, and what state has more funeral homes than Florida?
Really?
What?
Really? You're saying we got a lot of snowbirds? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, site-specific is hot right now. Fun Home would be really great to be done in a funeral home, and I don't know why they're skipping Florida.
Send your emails to james@broadwayradio.com. No, but I was upset because I didn't, as we talked about, when the Broadway cast did the concert down here a few weeks ago, they only let media stay for 15 minutes. So I had to leave, and I haven't seen it on Broadway, and I love the cast albums. I have both of them, the off-Broadway and the Broadway. So I'm really disappointed that it's not coming down here, at least in its first year. And like I said, I love Kate Schindel. The high belt she does towards the end of Legally Blonde is one of the most magical things I've ever heard. So while she probably won't be doing a whole lot of that in Fun Home, I'd really like to see her in this role. But it's going to look like I'm going to have to cross state lines to do that.
Tell me about the major regionals in Florida. I can't think off the top of my head.
Well,
I mean, there's a lot of touring houses.
Lots of touring houses. You've got Oslo Rep, and that's really the major one. There's Florida Studio Theater, which isn't as big, but you know, Oslo is probably the biggest one. Speaking of regional theaters, though, Fun Home is going to a lot of these big, you know, normal touring houses, but it's also, interestingly enough, in Seattle, it's going to the Fifth Avenue Theater. So it's actually going to more of a regional setting there. And obviously that's a theater that has hosted a lot of pre-Broadway runs as well as other productions. So it's interesting that it's making a stop there and not the normal touring house.
So I usually go to you for statistics on seating and venues, but what's the Fox in Atlanta? It seems like it's a really big house.
It's gigantic.
You don't want to put a Fun Home in there unless you're really going to close half the theater.
The Fox Theater in Atlanta, I want to say it's approaching 3,000. I've seen many a show there. Actually, it's more than that. It's 4,678.
Wow.
4,678. And it was originally a movie theater, and I've sat in the last row for Wicked there, and binoculars wouldn't have worked. You would have needed a telescope to see that.
Yeah. It's a beautiful theater, though.
It's gorgeous.
But so maybe if it doesn't tour, if Fun Home doesn't tour into deep into Florida, maybe some of the larger universities down in Florida might, you know, Florida State, University of Florida, Miami might do it. I mean, Florida State University's got a huge musical theater program.
It does. This is a show, much like we talked about An Act of God yesterday, this is a show that I think is going to do incredibly well at regional theaters and in educational theaters. I would just like to see, you know, Sam Gold's production and obviously, like I said, Kate Schindel as well. But, you know, if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be. But I'm going to find a way to see it one way or the other. It's really not coming. Durham, North Carolina is about the closest place to me that it's coming. So that's happening in October. So maybe I'll find a way to hitchhike all the way up there.
All right. Next steps, SNL vet to recreate Robin Williams's role in the Classic Stage Company's premiere of Dead Poets Society.
Yeah, if the Equity president going on the road with Fun Home wasn't surprising enough news, yesterday, John Doyle and the Classic Stage Company announced that Saturday Night Live alum Jason Sudeikis would take on the role of Professor John Keating in the world premiere of the stage adaptation of Dead Poets Society. The role was obviously originally created on screen by Robin Williams, another actor known, at least to that point, for his work in comedies, not dramas. The stage script comes from Tom Schulman, who won an Academy Award for the original screenplay. John Doyle will direct the production, which begins performances on October 27th and is currently scheduled to run through December 11th. Further casting will be announced soon. James, I love Jason Sudeikis. He has done a lot of really interesting stuff on screen, like Drinking Buddies and Race and The Last Man on Earth. That's on TV. That makes me think this could be really brilliant casting. He's a guy that has a lot of layers. He started on Saturday Night Live as a writer for his first 2 years before he actually became a cast member. And I think he's fantastic. So I think this is going to be one that really shocks a lot of critics. And probably is going to be a really tough ticket to get. And this is one, this might be another John Doyle success transferring to Broadway.
I have a mental block here. Who's he married to?
Olivia Wilde.
Oh, that's right.
Olivia she was Wilde on
from House.
From House. So she was 13 on
and
House.
Tron.
Didn't see that one. But yeah, she's another. She was recently on HBO's Vinyl, played Bobby Cannavale's wife on that show. But yeah, Jason Sudeikis is fantastic. And this is one to watch out for.
Totally off script here. Did you see the Dead Poets Society spoof on Saturday Night Live?
With Fred Armisen as the teacher? Yes. I don't want to spoil it.
Don't spoil it. We will. Yeah, maybe we could. Let's throw a link to it. See if we could find it and throw a link to it in the show notes. We won't spoil it for
so
you.
So good.
It's shocking. Just we're warning you now. It's shocking. Yeah, you know, just be ready to be shocked.
Yes,
all right.
It's awesome.
Next up, critics publish reviews for Groundhog Day. Groundhog.
It's weird.
Days.
I keep wanting to say Groundhog's Day.
Yeah, so do
apparently
I.
That's not what it is. It's there's no possessive.
Yes.
On the first word, but Groundhog Days opening night in London. Yeah, James,
we talked
about this earlier in the week, and yesterday marked the official opening of the Old Vic's world premiere production of Tim Minchin's new musical. Make sure I get this right. Groundhog Day, helmed by his Matilda director Matthew Warchus. The musical stars Tony nominee Andy Carl and Carlos Pierre in the Bill Murray and Andy McDowell roles from the 1993 film. Having already announced intentions to make an early spring opening on Broadway, interest on this one is really high. And James, we talked about whether or not that was still going to happen after producer Scott Rudin exited the production. But I got to say, looking at these reviews, it looks like with or without Rudin, this thing has legs. The New York Times' Ben Brantley wrote in his review, It is cool, as in hip, and warm, as in cuddly. It is spiky and sentimental, and it transforms its perceived weaknesses into strengths in ways that should disarm even veteran musical haters. That sounds positive. Mm. Dominic Cavendish from London's Telegraph wrote, "Something extraordinary has happened at the Old Vic. A much-loved, ingeniously funny and clever Hollywood film has made a triumphant theatrical rebirth in a show that looks, on first viewing, equal to and perhaps better than the movie." Also positive. The Guardian's Michael Billington wrote, "Musicals based on hit movies are to a penny, but this one comes with an exceptional pedigree. The result is fantastically smart, clever, and witty, but I have to say it left my heart untouched." Okay, a little slightly, it was a little tempered, but still fairly positive. James, I don't want to belabor the point, but we will have links to a half dozen or so reviews in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com. And that from Michael Billington of The Guardian is about the most negative thing that you can have, is that it's really funny, it's smart, it's clever. It just didn't move me. Everything else is nearly universally positive and borders on raves. So even without the clout and the big bucks of Scott Rudin, I have to think this is going to find a way to make its transfer to New York sooner rather than later, whether or not it's in its originally announced dates.
So my thought is here is that, you know, I can feel people yelling already. Perhaps Ben Brantley is as powerful as Scott Rudin. In this case, if Ben Brantley gave it a really good review, it might give it enough juice to transfer.
Well, I think, you know, critics' import on the success of a musical has been slowly declining, or maybe not even slowly, maybe precipitously declining recently. Look at, you know, Honeymoon in Vegas and some other shows. But what I think what Brantley's review will do, I think it'll open up some checkbooks.
I think that Brantley's got much more cred with producers and investors than he does with the general public. Absolutely.
So I think if they're still looking to fill a gap left by Rudin pulling out, I have to think that this review will make people's check signing hands a lot more willing to scribble a couple extra zeros on some checks.
My last point here about Groundhog Day is that if the stage version mimics the structure of the film, I'm unsure of when latecomers will actually be seated.
That's a really good point. One of the things that they do note in the show notes is that there is an illusionist as part of the design team. So now, obviously, Matthew Warchus was involved. He was the director of the not exactly well-received Broadway production of Ghost, which also had a lot of special effects illusions. So he has a hand at that, but they're definitely going to be doing something to make that transition from one day back 24 hours into another one, something special. So you've got a good point. That could be interesting. So if you're in London or if it does come to New York, make sure you get there ahead of time. Don't be late.
Hey, you know what we haven't done in a long time?
Talked about Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Exactly. We haven't talked about Lin-Manuel Miranda or Hamilton, but we have a little story here. Lin-Manuel Miranda to team with Alan Menken on a live action Little Mermaid.
Yeah, nothing to do with Hamilton. We're taking a little break. We're sitting in our separate corners. We're detoxing a little bit. But in terms of what you're talking about, yeah, details are scarce at this point. But Deadline is reporting that Lin-Manuel Miranda, already working on the score for Disney's upcoming Moana and set to star in the upcoming Mary Poppins sequel for the studio, will team with the legendary Alan Menken on adapting the classic animated musical version of The Little Mermaid into a live-action film. And Mark Platt, as he often does with Disney musicals, will produce. Deadline's Mike Fleming Jr. wrote, "They are still working out a lot of the details, including the level of Miranda's involvement. At this point, he isn't writing the script, but he will supervise the story, and the studio will hire a writer shortly." But the most exciting thing is that Fleming also notes that Miranda and Menken will be writing songs together for the film to be mixed with some from the 1989 original. Obviously, Menken's lyricist on the project and many other projects, Howard Ashman, died just a few years after this film was released in 1991. Fleming also makes it a point to inform readers that Miranda and his wife Vanessa named their son Sebastian after the film's Cranky Crab. Look, we know that Hamilton thing is a cash cow, but when it comes to movies, it's hard pressed to find a Disney movie that isn't a success. You got to go back to things like maybe Cars 2 or John Carter that just really were big bombs. Otherwise, they nail it in terms of who the creatives are, who the cast is, what the look is, what the feel is, what the marketing is. Disney is a money-making machine. And right now, if you're in the making money business, there's nobody to hitch a wagon to better than Lin-Manuel Miranda.
All right, next up in show and casting news, tell me what that is.
That is Todrick Hall.
Todrick Hall to don Lola's Kinky Boots this fall.
Yes.
Is that limerick?
It's did I write it like a limerick? I don't know. Let's count the syllables. No. Yesterday, producers Daryl Roth and Hal Luftig announced that internet superstar Todrick Hall would be joining the Broadway production of Kinky Boots this November in the role of Lola. Hall has previously appeared on Broadway in the original production of The Color Purple and in the Tony-winning Best Musical Memphis. He then went on to earn millions of fans and followers as a semifinalist on the 9th season of American Idol back when people actually watched the show. So him coming back to Broadway is a great thing. He also does and I'm going to draw a blank on this because I'm off script, but he does a cabaret show, something with Oz. Anyway, he is huge. Him and Cicely Tyson are both huge on Snapchat and Twitter and Instagram, and he's a huge internet guy. So I don't know that he'll bring as much publicity to it as Wayne Brady did when he took over the role of Lola, but he's somebody with a lot of juice and a certain demographic of fans. So, and he's super talented. I remember him when he was on American Idol, super talented guy.
Todrick Hall, straight out of Oz.
That's what it is. Straight out of Oz. Yeah. Very, very fun, cabaret, variety type show. In another bit of casting and show news, yesterday we learned that Lucy Prebble's well-received oft-extended play The Effect will end its off-Broadway run next month on September 4th, having played 212 performances at the Barrow Street Theater in New York. Congratulations to Prebble, director David Cromer, and the entire cast and crew. And finally, in this section, in a different kind of show news, James, we've talked about these rumors seemingly forever on this show, and I think even more on This Week on Broadway, but yesterday, Deadline's Mike Fleming Jr., this guy again, reported that Warner Brothers has officially greenlit a remake of A Star Is Born, starring Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. Cooper is also scheduled to be making his directorial debut in the film. Cooper had originally wanted to cast Beyoncé in the Janet Gaynor, Judy Garland, Barbara Streisand role, but that never materialized, so he went with Lady Gaga, who has proven herself to be a fairly accomplished Golden Globe-winning actress on TV. Production of the film will begin early next year. So, James, I think Cooper is an incredibly intelligent actor. Obviously, as anybody who watches TV and certain shows on Bravo know, he is a graduate of the esteemed Actors Studio in New York. So I'm excited to see what he does to up his game as a director and what Lady Gaga does to kind of move from a pop star to a cable TV star to the lead in a major motion picture.
I just wish he would go back to Alias.
Wow, you're going old school there.
I caught a replay of Alias. I think it was last weekend. It was just flipping through the TV, and I was like, oh my God, Bradley Cooper looks like he's 10 years old. You know?
It was like it was about 15 years ago. Alias was the J.J. Abrams show that kind of gave birth to the career of Jennifer Garner. Victor Garber played her father on the show.
Yeah.
Michael Vartan played her husband, I think. And then J.J. Abrams went on to do a show called Lost and then took over Star Trek, Star Wars, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And now he's the biggest thing in the entire world.
Have you noticed that many Broadway people who like television are big Lost fans? I'm always surprised at the Venn diagram of Lost fans and Broadway fans overlapping.
I love Lost. Yeah, I love Lost. And we've talked, Jen and I have both talked about this on Some Like a Pop. Jen actually has a Dharma Initiative, which is an organization on Lost. She has a tattoo on her arm of the Dharma Initiative logo. Yeah, it's a great show. It had so many layers. It felt often like a play. Obviously, the themes of the show weren't exactly things you would see in a play, but the depth and the level and the characters in Lost definitely felt theatrical to me.
Who was the main writer on that? Was it JJ as well?
He was with the executive producer, but Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse were the showrunners and the writers. Carlton Cuse went on to create the TV show Bates Motel on AMC, and Damon Lindelof went on to create the show The Leftovers on HBO, which I believe is one of, if not the best, one of the top two shows on television right now, and it's getting ready to start its third and final season coming up here on HBO in the fall or early winter. I can't remember when.
I always think about TV shows and mashups like, what if Aaron Sorkin had written an episode of Lost or a couple of episodes of Lost? Could you imagine?
We would have seen a lot of John Locke and the Smoke Monster walking and talking.
Oh, Shonda Rhimes. All right, let's get to the recommendations and wrap it up.
All right. First, I wanted to give a shout out to Broadway radio show that the Curtain Call podcast. Not only do they do great shows, they've had a run of really good ones recently. They did one, I want to say a week or so ago, where they were backstage at Henry V. And that's one of my favorite, if not my favorite, Shakespeare play. And they kind of talked about that after Brexit. And then they did one that they released yesterday with the Frank Sinatra show that's in the West End right now. They also talked to Alfie Beau. So check that podcast out if you haven't already. But specifically for our UK listeners, and we know there are tens of thousands, if not millions of UK listeners listening to this right now, the Curtain Call online store currently has the UK exclusive for the original US version of Hamilton the Revolution. So if you want to see the original US version of the Hamilton, the only place you can get it is Curtain Call's shop online. We will have a link in the show notes at broadwayradio.com. You can get it for £35. James, my exchange rate calculator has gone on the fritz after Brexit, so I have no idea how much that is in dollars, but I have a feeling it's a really good deal. Yeah, it's a really good deal. I've got on my bookshelf, the Hamilton is next to the Curtain Call book. So this is a great companion piece to Curtain Call's first backstage in London theater. So check that out, everybody in the UK. And then we talked about this yesterday, and I apologized for not letting you know about it in time for you to get tickets. But as I promised, my colleagues from Broadway World were at the Transports Group's concert, the Minnie Peters concert of Peter Pan, where a number of different stars sang the songs of Peter Pan. People in the concert was narrated by Charles Bush. It had Carolee Carmello, Rachel Bay Jones, Ann Harada, Mark Kudish, Tony Sheldon, Elizabeth Stanley, our friend Al Silber, Mary Testa, many, many more, Ruthie Ann Miles. There's some great, great songs. It's about 8.5-9 minutes of footage in these highlights. So we will have that in the show notes as well, and you should definitely check that out. A lot of people poo-poo it because of the not-so-hot NBC Live version, but I don't know which version of it was, but one of the Mary Martin filmed versions, because she did it two or three times, I think, is one of the things that I grew up on watching. So I have a very soft spot for the Peter Pan musical, and so watching these highlights was really, really fun for me.
All right, before we wrap it up here, did we get any free pizza?
No pizza, but my parents, talking about Donato's, we did have some people tweet in about how great Donato's is.
Yeah, I saw that.
It was great. And my parents have been known on their trips up to Ohio to ship Donato's pizzas frozen in dry ice down to their home in Florida just so they can have it down there where they cook it. It's not the same, but it's you do what you got to do.
All right. Get us out of here.
All right. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. You can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt and subscribe to Something Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. As you heard, we talk a lot about, these kind of things. Lost, Jason Sudeikis. It's a good place to get some pop culture news.
My name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thank you for spending some of your Wednesday with us, and we will talk to you tomorrow.